Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you.
Imagine you're a young adult cancer survivor, and you're looking for a group to help you out because the resources at your hospital are more geared toward older patients. What do you do? Most young adult survivors would go on the internet and search for help. And that's what Jack Bouffard did. He found the I2I Foundation on the internet. He is a part-time employee of that group. He is a big cancer advocate. He gives back to cancer patients. And we'll talk a little bit about Jack Bouffard Shoes on Facebook. Let's meet him now. Today we're talking to Jack Bouffard. He is a stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma survivor. How are you today, Jack?
Hi, I'm fine, Mel. How are you?
Excellent. So we were talking before the show about I2I and stupid cancer and how you got into it. So let's talk about how you found out you were diagnosed and then how you got into I2I.
Okay. Well, basically, I was diagnosed January of 08. And prior to my diagnosis, the end of 07, I had 3 months of high fevers, weight loss, a night sweat, you know, all the crap that many of us have gone through leading up to diagnosis. But the doctors couldn't figure out what it was. I was going through all these blood tests and blood cultures and a CAT scan, and everything was just pointing towards some undetected viral infection. And then New Year's Eve, I was at a party and didn't feel well at all. And the next morning, I realized that I had 2 lymph nodes pop up and went back to the doctor, and they admitted me to the hospital, took out the nodes, and biopsied them, and 8 days later, I was diagnosed as a stage 2 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
And how old were you then?
32.
Okay.
So after the initial diagnosis, I had a PET scan, which showed cancer on my liver and my bones, which led to the stage 4 diagnosis.
Wow.
And to show you how naive I was about the whole cancer world, the doctor said, you know, when I was at my Welcome to Cancer consultation, he was like, you know, we originally thought you were a stage 2, but you're a stage 4. And I was like, oh, okay, and that's out of 5? And he goes, no, that's out of 4. And I was like, oh, okay. So, and then I was just like, oh, man, like, not only do I feel like an idiot, but this is really bad news. But then I started my treatment a couple weeks later, and it was 5 months of intense chemo and came out the other end doing all right.
No radiation, just the chemo?
Yeah, no radiation. So I was fortunate that way.
Yes.
It was just chemo, but they hit me pretty hard. I was going like 3 days a week for 5 hours a day.
And wow.
Well, it wasn't much fun.
What kept you going during 5-hour treatments three days a week?
Well, I always had friends and family stopping by. I was lucky to have a cancer center in my town that was like 2 miles from my house. And my parents live like two miles away from that. So having both my cancer center and my family in town helped a lot. And then, you know, some friends and, you know, some people would travel a little bit to come hang out with me. But I have a good group of friends that live locally. So I always had company. But for the most part, I would kind of just like zone out and try to sleep through the treatment just so I could make the time pass.
Not during your treatment, but like the other times when you're not going through treatment, what kept you going towards that, your friends and them hanging out with you and that support system?
Yeah. I mean, I always had friends stopping by. Like, we'd hang out at my house, watch a movie, you know. But I was able to function pretty well. The anti-nausea meds were pretty good.
Okay.
I was tired and I felt like crap, but I could still function to a certain extent. So I was able to go out for dinners and, you know, go out for a little bit, maybe go for a short walk. So I always had stuff to, like, keep me going, and people lent me, like, DVDs, so I was, like, watching TV series and stuff like that. So it wasn't too hard to keep myself entertained, but at the same time, I was still down and out and wasn't able to do everything I wanted to do.
Right. So you did your chemo, and then were you working at that time?
No, I actually was in a transition phase of my life where I just finished massage therapy school when I was diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
So I graduated in the middle of December, got diagnosed the second week of January. So everything was just put on hold for a year. Like, I thought that I would be working in January as a massage therapist and starting my career. But then when I was diagnosed, everything just got pushed back, you know, like, you know, what I thought would be 6 months, but ended up being like a full year because I didn't have the energy to work even after I was cancer-free.
Right. So you went from stage four to cancer-free after they tested you? After how long?
Yeah, I had a... I was in chemo from January to May of 08.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first week of June, I had a PET scan that showed that I was cancer-free.
Awesome.
And fortunately, I've been doing well ever since, so...
No scansiety?
What's that?
I said no scansiety. We all have that.
No, I mean, I'd be lying if I said no, but it's not too much. You know, when I do go in for a scan, I just look at it as routine maintenance and just something that I have to do.
Right.
But... You know, during that day or two when I'm waiting for the phone call, I'm like, okay, like, what's going on? I mean, I do think about it, but I don't, you know, freak myself out because I expected results. And I think if I were to be re-diagnosed or diagnosed again or however you want to put it,
right.
it would be more devastating for me to hear it the second time around than the
first time. Oh, I'm sure. I haven't.
Just about, like, I'm totally mentally over it.
Exactly. I have a nurse who calls from my doctor's office whenever I have a scan. She's like, so Mel, how are you doing? I'm like, you tell me, because you're calling me about a test or something. But when it's not the doctor's voice, then I take a deep breath. Because we all know when the doctor calls you, it's never good news.
Right. And that happened to me the beginning of last year, where I got the call from the office. And the woman whom I talk to all the time says, hang on a second, you know, the doctor wants to talk to you.
Oh,
and I was just like, oh, my God, like my heart stopped. And I was just like, this isn't good because normally, you know, this woman says, oh, you're all set. And I'm like, okay, cool. And to hear this one woman who's always been giving me good news say, hang on, the doctor wants to talk to you. She's
exactly.
Like, oh, God, this might be good. But that was just, there was like a little activity in my neck and he was concerned about it. And you know, took some of the cells, checked them out, and determined it wasn't anything to worry about. But I was freaking out, you know, when he first told me that. You know, I was just like, oh, my God, and thought the worst case scenario. And
oh, I'm sure. Yeah, never do that. You should always tell your doctor. It's like, please have your nurse warn me. You know, if it's nothing bad, just say, the doctor just has to explain this to you.
Right.
Yeah, because when I found out about my cancer... I had a biopsy on a Thursday and I called on a Tuesday and I called the doctor's office and the nurse said, oh, we don't have your test results. I'm like, okay. And then 2 minutes later, the doctor called me and she says, how soon can you be here? And I was like, and I don't remember driving there. I remember getting there. I remember thinking, oh bleep, it's cancer. But I don't remember the drive there. I remember when I heard that and then being at her office. So the whole like, must have been like a 5-minute drive was just a blur in my memory.
Right. Yeah. And they're not delivering good news in person.
Right.
When they say, you know, we need you to come in, then you're just like, oh boy.
Yeah. Grab your family member. Cause I mean, yeah. Grab somebody that you know to be with you if you can. Even if it's, you know, cause it's hard. I was by myself just because I was like, all right, well, the doctor lived like 2 minutes away from my house. So I figured I'm like, all right, we'll just get this news over with. And then I'll go home and deal with it. And she just wanted me to call my then boyfriend, now fiance at the time. And I was just like, just tell me. And then she said it's cancer. Then the Peanuts voices came out, wah, 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 you know. So
yeah, exactly. And it's good to have someone who can keep a level head with you there because they can take notes. And
exactly.
You know, because like when I was first at that Welcome to Cancer consultation, like I had my girlfriend at the time with me and my mom. And, you know, my mom was there, like, taking notes, and, you know, she was the level head. Like, even though she was worried about me, she at least knew to ask the questions because the other two, like myself and her and my girlfriend, were freaking out.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of stuff that came up during that conversation that I don't even remember because I was in that, like, oh, my God stage.
Exactly. My head was spinning, and my boyfriend was taking notes. And I always say get a voice recorder, too. Even if you can't take notes quick enough, you can always listen to it later, then call back and ask questions.
Exactly. That's good advice.
Yes. So... You found you were cancer-free, and now we were talking about you trying to find some help, maybe some support groups.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is always good if, you know, after cancer.
Yeah, and navigating this experience is scary because there's a lot of unknown, and, you know, it's like you don't know what you don't know. You know, fortunately, there was some local resources that I was able to tap into, but there were only two groups that were available to me. There was a men's support group, which was all men prostate cancer survivors in their 50s and 60s.
Oh.
So here I was, you know, early 30s with lymphoma, and I was like, okay, like, these guys might make great golfing buddies, but what do I have to relate to them about with prostate cancer? And then there was another group, which was more of a spiritual group, which was good because, you know, it's cool to just, like, hang out with other people and talk and everything.
Right.
I go to this group, and I'm the youngest by 25 to 30 years.
Wow.
I'm the only guy, and the majority of the women in the group were breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's like, okay, like, now I'm in a room full of my mom and my grandma. And
that might have been kind of uncomfortable for you to talk about things.
Definitely. Because that's the thing is, with the generational gap, like, you know, one of the women would be like, oh, I don't have the energy to keep up with my grandchildren. And another woman was like, oh, well, you know, I don't have the energy to take my teenager from dance to soccer and then have dinner ready for my husband comes home at the end of the night. And I'm sitting there like, I just want to get better because summer's coming. I want to go see Dave Matthews and some baseball games.
Exactly.
So it's like a huge generational gap. And then the other side of it was, you know, the fact that these people, like, have their spouses and their children and grandchildren.
Right.
And, you know, my fertility is compromised, and I don't know if I'm going to have kids and stuff like that. So, you know, there was a big generational gap in addition to the age-appropriate support that I needed.
So what happened then?
Well, my girlfriend at the time, the same person that was with me at my consultation,
yes,
Googled young adult cancer support or, you know, something, and found the I'm Too Young for This website, and then found Matthew Zachary on Facebook and friended him, and then friend suggested me, you know, forwarded me all the I2I information. And I was just like, oh, my God, like, this is pretty cool. This is, you know, for my generation. Like, this is for me. I went to the OMG conference in 2008, which was the first one that they had in New York City. And I went with my mom. You know, this was April of 08, so I was still a month from the end of my treatment.
Right.
So, you know, my mom and I went to the city, and we went to the conference. And there I was in a room of 100 people that were all my age, you know, not the older crowd that
right.
I had been exposed to in the
not your golfing buddies.
Yeah, in the support group, exactly. So, and then obviously all the content at the conference was all about young adults. So I was like, wow, like, this is really awesome. This is exactly what I've been looking for. You know, sat through all the breakout sessions, got a lot of good information. And then after the conference ended, we all went across the street to the Planet Hollywood and had an open bar happy hour. And I was like, okay, now this is a cancer support group.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, even though I wasn't drinking that night, it was still, you know, nice to be in a bar setting and to be amongst people that were my age. And, you know, I made a lot of my initial New York City cancer connections that night. Many of the people I met that day are, you know, some of my best friends today, obviously Matthew Zachary being one of them.
Right.
But it really, you know, ignited the fire that you know, is now my advocacy career, because I was like, this is exactly what I've been looking for. And, you know, I want to make sure that other people out there who were feeling the same way that I felt get the support that they need. And that's when I started volunteering for I2I.
I agree, because the local hospital, which I love, and they just released an article about me, they have a dinner every year. And I swear, I was the youngest person there, and I just turned 40. And I felt like, I know this sounds bad, I felt like I was at Denny's at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was inspiring that these people were over, you know, 30, 40 year cancer survivors. But still, it's like, well, I know that there are younger people out there. And I know through your advocacy and my advocacy, we want to make sure that the doctors know that it's not just an older person's disease, that if you're not feeling well, don't just say, well, it's probably just nothing. Go home. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Because
right.
I'm sure that you've found a lot of young adult survivors who've heard that, and so have I.
Exactly.
Oh, you're 25. You're 25. It's not breast cancer. Like, and then,
right.
you know, you wait, and it's stage 4, or, you know, God forbid, you don't make it.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, just like a Matthew Zachary story, he was prescribed Robitussin when he had a brain tumor.
Right.
You know, he was told that he had a bad cold or a sinus infection or something, and then they're like, oh, wait, Noah, it's not something that can be cured by Robitussin. No, we're going to take this tumor out of your head and then blast it with radiation.
Right. And that's scary for someone his age. Now, he's a 14-year survivor, and he's in his 30s. And luckily, he just had children, which is awesome. You know, but
right.
a lot of young adult survivors lose their chance to have children and have fertility issues. I think he was telling me on the way to the airport after the Cancer Treatment Center's empowerment rally that they thought that he wasn't able to have children at all.
Right.
So, you know, we as young adults have to keep the doctors on their toes as well as the survivors, saying, hey, you know, this, you can't just send somebody home because they're young.
Right. And that's part of the reason why I2Y is I'm too young for this, because doctors do tell us, you know, oh, well, you're too young for this. It's not cancer. You're too young for this.
Right.
And, you know, at the same time, the patient's like, why do I have cancer? I'm too young for this.
Exactly.
It's got a double meaning that is a very real and, you know, honest meaning. But, yeah, I mean, it's all about, like, a lot of what we do with I2Y is educating the medical community.
Yes.
That young adults can and do get cancer, and that they need to be aware of the age-appropriate resources and the needs that we have.
And I think especially with Matt Zachary's group, because I started blogging on his blog when it was stupidcancer.com, and then mm-hmm. I started my own blog. I think if I hadn't have found Matthew Zachary, because I didn't know about Facebook when I was going through my treatment, and not have been able to blog on his blog and then start my own, it would have been totally different experience. Because finding people of my, I mean, I'm almost, you know, grandfathered out of the young adult cancer, because I'll be 41 this year. But I know, listen to you. Haha, she's old.
Well, actually, you never graduate from I2Y, because it goes by the age you were when you were diagnosed.
That's true. That's true. Matt told me that this weekend. But, you know, not finding him and finding other people who are my age or younger going, wow, this is, you know, I'm not just an anomaly. You know, the doctor who did my biopsy said he was only surprised by a handful of diagnoses. And while that's good in a way, in another way, he should just, I mean, I don't think you should always assume it's cancer, but you shouldn't say like, you don't have to worry about it. You know,
right.
I had another exam who said, well, it's probably not cancer. You don't have to worry about it. And I patted him on the shoulder and I said, I've heard that before, doc. So, you know, really don't sugarcoat anything. You know, and luckily it turned out to be, you know, nothing. But as a young adult, you have to be concerned about these things.
Definitely.
You know, and I think I2Y is such a great resource, and all the little offshoots of Y2Y, or I don't want to say offshoots, but all the other groups that are linked in, like Tamika and Friends.
Yeah.
And I guess all the other.
Co-collaborators.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. That's. And Immerman's Angels, which I know that you guys are. Our friends
and,
with him.
First Ascents, like Immerman Angels, Tamika and Friends, First Ascents, and I2Y recently formed a partnership.
Nice.
So whenever we're at an event or something, we're talking about all four organizations.
Excellent. Yes, I've had Tamika.
It's all about collaborating resources, because not everybody covers all aspects of the young adult experience. And, you know, we need to, you know, pull our resources together and not try to like stay in a bubble and say like, oh, well, we only do this and we don't care what anybody else is doing, because it's all about properly supporting the community. And, you know, like with the Stupid Cancer Radio Show and the I2Y website, like mm-hmm. we promote everything that's going on in the young adult cancer world.
Right.
And there are other organizations that don't. So like we plug everything everybody's doing, and there are some that don't plug what we're doing
right. Because
they have their own agenda or their ego or whatever. And it's really not fair to the community, because some young adult who doesn't know about I2Y or Immerman's or First Ascents or whatever is only going to be exposed to that other organization and not know that something that they could benefit from exists.
Exactly. And it's funny, whenever I get off the phone with a young adult survivor, I always say, well, have you heard of the Stupid Cancer Show? Because I've had people on my show who I tell about you guys. And, you know, I've seen people like vice versa. I've seen, oh, I've had them on before and whatever. And you're right. It's all collaborative. I don't think we as a cancer community should be saying like, oh, this, you know, this is mine, you know,
right?
Because it's all about sharing. I mean, what if I know of a side effect that helps somebody who has, you know, Hodgkin's lymphoma? You know, I mean, I don't focus on breast cancer, which I think a lot of cancer-specific shows do, because in my mind, cancer is cancer.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, pancreatic or breast cancer or lymphoma or anything, because we just want to eradicate all of it.
Exactly.
You know. And, you know, I might get a piece of nugget of information from you that I didn't know about that I could share to somebody else and just in passing, and that could totally help them on their cancer journey. And that's and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and you know, it, and you know, everything you said is exactly right. And you know, the thing about I2I is it's age specific, not disease specific. And you know, we support the whole community regardless of what type of cancer that you had.
Exactly.
And we had a someone email us like a month or two ago that was kicked out of the survivor's tent at one of the big organizations, Walk, because they weren't a breast cancer survivor.
What?
Yeah, swear to God. True story.
That's crazy.
So it's like, okay, like, you know, you are banished because you're not one of us.
Right. I always say big deal. I have a month, but, you know, cancer is never sleeps and it's 24 hours a day. You know, I'd be happy because I was diagnosed in September of 07. And then when I was going through treatment, it was pink ribbon palooza.
Yep.
And
pink nausea, as we call it.
Pink nausea. And I swear, and I blogged about it, like there wasn't anything out there that didn't have a pink ribbon. I swear kitty litter even had it. I was like, okay. And the TV shows had it and shopping had it. I was just like, oh my God, I can't take it. You know, that's nice that everybody loves the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but you know, breast cancer isn't the only one out there.
Right. And that's, you know, and unfortunately there's a lot of women out there who are diagnosed with other type of cancers.
Right.
And people just automatically assume that they're a breast cancer.
Right.
You know, and part of it is the way that our society has been trained where, you know, you have like the big guns with the pink ribbons and everything. And everybody's just like doing everything for breast cancer because that's what they know. And the fact that the entire month of October is just completely washed with pink. And, you know, like you just said, the pink ribbon is slapped on everything. And regardless of the fact that, you know, a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the money that's made by these huge corporations by the selling their products actually goes to research.
Right.
You know, there's so many people that are just like, oh, my God, like, I'm so pinked out. Like, even, like, all the breast cancer survivors that, you know, not all of them, but, like, the majority of them that I've come in touch with are like, oh, my God, like, I'm so sick of pink because it's everywhere. And, like, I am a breast cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm. And during the month of October, whenever I go shopping and I find something ridiculous, I'll take a picture on it, I'll put it on my Facebook page. And the best thing I saw was actually last month, it was a melon with a pink ribbon on it. I thought that was ironic. So
really?
Yeah. It's on my Facebook page.
Yeah, and I do that too. Like the pink Snuggie and like all that crap that comes our way in October. Like there's a lot of us that take pictures and send it to Facebook, just like you said. But the fact of the matter is the pink ribbon is not regulated.
Right.
So, you know, some company can slap the pink ribbon on their product, market it that way, and sell billions of dollars of this, you know, worth of this product, not give a penny to any type of breast cancer research or foundation or whatever, and then use the excuse of, oh, well, we just put that on there so it serves as a reminder for women to get mammograms and check their breasts and stuff.
Yeah, I won't buy products where it says a portion goes to breast cancer research, and I won't do any kind of fundraising event unless I know where the money's going, whether it's local or national. Because like you said, it's like, well, breast cancer research, that could just mean, you know, some guy putting it in his pocket and saying, okay, I'm going to do self-exams for people. You know?
Right. Well, then that's what it is, you know, if you don't see any fine print on that product that says that any of the money is going to cancer research, then most likely that company is just using the excuse of, oh, well, we're just raising awareness.
We're all aware there's breast cancer, trust me.
Yeah. And then the other side of the coin is that, you know, when, like you said, when it says a percentage or whatever, question, like, how much of it? And
exactly.
Is there a cap? Because there's some of the candies and the products that we all enjoy that have the pink ribbon on it, it says, you know, a portion of the sales is going to research, but, you know, up to $25,000 or up to $50,000. And we're like, wait a minute, aren't they selling tens of millions of dollars worth of this product?
Right, like the KFC thing. Let's not get started about that, but yeah.
Well, that's something that we went off on the Stupid Cancer Show about weeks in a row. And I forget what the exact math was, but it had to do with the fact that KFC was marketing the pink bucket as the largest donation to breast cancer or whatever, which was going to be like $8.5 million.
And
we figured, you know, because none of us are KFC connoisseurs,
right,
but we figured that if a bucket of chicken is $9, and with that $9 purchase, 50 cents goes toward that donation,
right,
it costs society $17 million in buckets of chicken to generate that $8.5 million donation. So now KFC is making, you know, $11, $12 million to generate this $8.5 million donation, which is a lot of money, but at the same time, it's like, you know, so $8.5 million going to a cause is a good thing, but the fact that they're profiting $11 to $12 million, you know, themselves is what I have a problem with.
But
there was one time I was in Linens and Things before they went out of business, and they had a whole shelving area of pink merchandise. And I sat there, and I looked at all the fine print on all of them. And a lot of them did say, you know, a portion up to a certain dollar amount. So, like, I get it, because a lot of them are marketed that way,
right?
With the caps. But there was a pillow, and I don't remember the manufacturer or whatever, something I hadn't heard of. But it had, like, a huge pink ribbon on the pillow. And it said, a portion of the proceeds is going toward breast cancer research. And that was the only thing that it said. It didn't say where the money was going
nice.
Or how much the portion was. So I said to myself, okay, they can sell $10 billion worth of these pillows and donate a penny.
Right.
And that is a portion of the money that was raised is going toward cancer research.
Yeah, it's not right.
But people, you know, consumers have to be conscious and make smart decisions about what they're buying and where the money's going, because there are so many people that would just be like, oh, I'm going to buy this one as opposed to that one because this one's got the breast cancer ribbon on it and I'm helping, but they're not helping.
Exactly. I know. And I think too much is spent. I don't want to say too much is spent, but I mean too much focus is on breast cancer, not the other cancers.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And like I said, a lot of women who are diagnosed with other types of cancers, I think, would agree with that statement wholeheartedly based on the fact that they get no attention compared to the breast cancer people.
Right. And like I always say, woo, we have a month, but, you know, so what? You know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think,
breasts are more sexy to talk about.
Marketable,
thank you, than colon cancer.
I'm all for saving boobies.
I am too, but we got to save everything. If we're going to save boobies, we have to save everything else.
That's definitely. I'm sure nobody loves boobies more than I do, but there are other things that need to be saved.
So you're at I2I and you're a volunteer. So
yep.
So you started volunteering, and I guess what happened there?
Yeah, well, right after the OMG conference in 08, which was, again, my first exposure to I2I, I started volunteering for, with Matt helping plan some of the events, and then they got the new office, so I helped with that.
So just to let people know, it was just basically Matt, right?
It was just Matt,
mm-hmm.
Right. And a lot of what he was doing, including the radio show, was right out of his home in Brooklyn.
Right.
And the organization was just starting to grow, you know, get bigger and bigger when I came on board. So I was helping them plan some events. And then we got office space in New York City, so I was helping them, you know, the whole transition into, like, an actual office, speaking at a couple of different events, and then exhibiting I2I with Matt. And then it finally just got to the point where we were, like, always together, and I was everywhere he was, which then led to me coming on and co-hosting the Stupid Cancer Show with him in January of 2009. Everything since then has just exploded. The organization's grown tremendously, both in membership, you know, monetarily, where we're getting some big sponsors now, like, so we can make OMG a free event. And, you know, because we're always trying to keep our events completely free, because we're always like, we'll get the money from somewhere else.
Right.
Don't worry about it. Just show up and have a good time, and we'll get the money from pharmaceutical companies and big donors and stuff. And the big thing is, because OMG 2010 was such a great success, that we're able to build a bigger and better sponsorship package to the pharmaceutical companies and all the big guns so we can offer travel scholarships for next year's conference, because
Sweet.
There were so many people from all over the country that wanted to be at OMG, but the cost of travel prohibited them from participating.
Yes, right here. I'm raising my hand. You can't see us on the radio, but yes.
Yeah. But we were able to live stream the conference online.
Excellent.
So So we had 550 people from 40 states and six countries register for this year's OMG conference.
Wow.
And just about 800 people watched the live feed that day. And since then, we've had about 2,000 hits of people watching it online.
Excellent.
And if you go to the homepage for supercancer.com, toward the bottom on the right, you'll see the link to the OMG podcast or webcast, whatever it's called.
But I know that actually going there and then talking to the survivors and all the guest speakers like yourself, or even the people in the audience, learning bits from them would be something that I'd want to do a little bit more than, you know, obviously watching the live stream. I mean, if I had my choice, I'm not saying that I wouldn't watch a live stream, but I would rather be there.
Oh yeah, and everybody would much rather be there. But
yes, sometimes
like even some of my friends in Connecticut who weren't able to go to the city because they were in treatment, mm-hmm. or you know, the fatigue was setting in,
oh,
and
yes.
they just couldn't handle a whole day in the city. They were able to watch it online, and they were
That's
texting
awesome.
Me. Like, this is great because I can lie in bed and watch it. But
were they asking you questions and stuff?
No, they weren't asking me questions, but they, you know, some of them were busting my chops while I was speaking.
Awesome. Awesome. So your part-time note, I have to ask you, where did the Jack Bouffard shoes come in?
All right. You want the short version?
Yeah, the short version. Why not?
Okay. I have been wearing a pair of the Livestrong Nike sneakers for a long time now. I actually have two pairs of the same shoes. And at some point during 08, or no, I'm sorry, during 09, I was taking pictures with my cell phone of my feet where I'm like kicking back and relaxing somewhere or whatever. It was kind of like, this is my view of the world. So whether it's, you know, sitting at home watching TV or going to a baseball game or something like that, I would just kick back, take a picture, and send it to Facebook.
Right.
So then people started commenting the photos like, oh, I wonder where Jack's feet are going to be next, or I wonder where we're going to see Jack next or whatever. So fast forward to November of 09, a bunch of us are at the Livestrong Young Adult Alliance meeting in Austin, Texas, and we're at this happy hour, you know, this whole conversation comes around my sneakers. And Hannah Vogler from the Cohen Club and Tanika Felder from Tanika and Friends started talking about how my shoes need to have their own fan page on Facebook.
Awesome.
So I said, okay, I want no part of that, but if you guys want to create a fan page, go right ahead.
Yeah, but you've been posting,
like,
though.
Weird. What's that?
But you've been posting your pictures up there, haven't you?
Yeah, but they just go into, like, my mobile uploads.
Oh, okay.
But but no, so now, but see, the thing is, like, there's admins for my shoe page.
That's funny.
So when I do upload a picture now, it goes into my mobile uploads, and then they move them over to the shoe, to the fan page.
That's hilarious.
And then I can comment them and stuff. Because I was always, like, I would always find it annoying when I would get a Facebook invite where it's, like, you know, Joe Blow is a fan of Joe Blow and suggests you become a fan of Joe Blow. So it's
right.
Like, you know, I'm not going to, like, send people to become a fan of myself because I think that's tacky.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, so like, a week after the Alliance meeting, I get this message from Hannah inviting me to become a fan of Jack Bouffard's shoes. And within the first few days, we had, like, 200 fans. I think it's at the point now where it's just about over 500 fans or whatever.
That's awesome.
So anybody on Facebook, if you just type in Jack Bouffard shoes, it shows up.
But see, that's a fun thing. Like Lynn Lane has his little bunny Fufu and his cats.
Right.
You know,
that's a little thing
where someone who's going through treatment can just look, be like, oh, I wonder where Jack is at today.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, it's become part of our vernacular now.
Yes.
Where, you know, like, somebody will say, like tagging him in a Facebook post. It's like, I'm hanging out with Jack Bouffard and Jack Bouffard shoes today or something like that. Or, you know, I wonder if Jack Bouffard shoes are going to come visit me anytime soon. Just like stuff like that where, you know, like even yesterday I did it, a friend of mine's page who was doing a 5K race in the next town over. I told her that I was signing up for it and that she needs to keep up with me and Jack Bouffard shoes.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
but see, that kind of thing, you know, the smallest thing can keep people going during treatment or even survivorship, which is a huge thing that I2Y helps out with. You know, just looking at your shoe page, if, you know, going through, and, you know, that makes you laugh and that cheers you up. You know.
Yeah, and I think the funniest thing that I've done, if I'm allowed to get a big head for a moment.
Sure.
When I did the New York City Half Marathon in March.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the fodder that's on Facebook is about how I'm a fast food junkie and I don't exercise and I'm lazy and like all this stuff.
Right.
So I did the New York City Half Marathon, and I did it as part of like part gimmick to be like, you know, I'm running a half marathon and like this is insane, which it was. But then it's also to raise awareness for I2Y and the young adult cancer movement. So I brought my phone with me on the course, and I was tweeting, Facebooking, and uploading pictures during the race.
That's awesome.
Which people just found hysterically funny. So at the end of the day, I come home and I'm sore as all get up. So I make myself this jacuzzi bath, and I got in the bath wearing my shoes. So this picture that was uploaded is a picture of my legs and my feet, or and my shoes popping out of these, like all these bubbles or whatever.
That's awesome.
And posting about like what a long day it was or whatever.
So, that's excellent.
But really what I did was I just posed, like, I posed with a picture and then just, like, threw my shoes in a bucket and threw them in the washing machine. But then, because, like I said, I have two pairs of these shoes.
Yes.
So when I was done and I went into bed that night, I took the other pair of sneakers that weren't in New York City that day, put them on my pillow next to my medal from the race, and took a picture of my shoes, the medal, and my head, like, all on the pillow, like, and I pretended I was sleeping.
That's
and
funny.
I just said goodnight to everybody.
That's
so
funny.
I had these two pictures, one of them in the bath and then one of them in bed with me, even though they're two different pairs of shoes. But the feedback I got on them was just so hysterically funny that, you know, and like you said, I'm sure it picked up somebody's spirits that day, and there were a lot of people tracking me during the race, and like there were bets on if I was going to make it or not, but...
Nice.
You know,
did Matt have an over-under about if you were going to make it or not?
Yeah,
bets?
Well, I don't think there was an under, but there was definitely an over as far as, like, it'll be over when he takes his first steps. But the other thing was in the documentation for the race, it said that anybody who's not finished within 3 hours of one of the last elite runners or whatever, there's this bus that comes along and scoops up everybody off the course and drives them to the finish line. So not that there was an over, but Matt was convinced that I would be catching a ride on the short bus.
But you didn't.
No, I didn't. And I actually finished the race in 2 hours and 53 minutes.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. That's such an inspiration for other survivors.
Thanks.
You know?
Well, and you know what? You're right, though, because then I had people, like, Facebooking me and writing me saying, I'm going to come to New York and do it with you next year.
Sweet.
And I was like, next year? I was like, I have to do this again?
Yeah, I know. I can't run unless I'm being chased because my knees are just, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's how you keep yourself busy during survivorship, too.
Exactly. But the funny thing was, and we did this whole bit on the radio show about it, but I got, like, my official certificate in the mail from the New York Roadrunners Club, and I read all the stats that were on the certificate on the radio show, and there was, like, you know, 12,000 runners, and I came in, like, 11,000 and whatever, so I came in 151 people from the end.
Hey, you weren't the last guy. That's all that matters.
Right, and I beat 23 other males. So, like, and it was really funny because I'm not a runner, I'm not an athlete, but I did complete the race. But I also, you know, came in 151 from the end of a race of 12,000 people. So we certainly had fun with it. One of the things that I brought up was that there was this man who was probably in his mid-70s that kept, like, he would pass me, and then I would pass him, and then he would pass me, and I would pass him. And I was like, there's no way I can let this Mr. Magoo guy beat me. So, like, my goal for the last, like, 5 miles was just to beat Mr. Magoo. And I did, but it was just funny because had I not beaten Mr. Magoo, that I would have only beaten 22 other guys.
That's funny. Were you thinking about elbowing him, like, at the very end? I'm just kidding.
I don't think I needed to because he definitely could have taken himself out.
Well, that's awesome. See how you – I just love when I hear stories about, you know, like, you running. That was your inspiration for others, whether you – obviously you didn't mean it to be. and Jack Bouffard shoes, which makes me smile too with your cats, and you know, whenever you're at Yankee Stadium and that, that kind of thing. I mean, anything that keeps your mind positive is a good thing.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's something that I'm definitely aware of, because like a lot of the stuff that I do is shtick just to make people laugh and entertain and stuff. But you know, when someone emails me and says, you know, I was having a really crappy day and something you said made me laugh, or like I saw that picture that you put up or whatever, I'm just like, you know, it makes everything totally worth it, because you know, I know that there's people out there that are affected by what I'm doing, and though I'm not consciously thinking about them all the time, like I know that they're out there, and you know, knowing that I could do something, you know, stupid to make people laugh, you know, I'm all for it. So.
Exactly. I told some people, I said, I will do pretty much anything for a cancer survivor except shave my head, because that was traumatic. Yeah. That was traumatic for me. I don't know if I'd run a marathon, because I think the knees would just snap in two. But yeah, I would do pretty much anything to cheer somebody up.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
For sure. So, Jack, if people want to get a hold of you, and I know if they want more information on stupid cancer, how do they get that info?
Well, yeah, well, the website is very easy. You can either type in I2Y, which is the letter I, the number 2, and the letter Y.com, or just stupidcancer.com, and that will redirect them to the homepage. And stupidcancershow.com is mm-hmm. the home office of the radio show. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Jack Bouffard. And it's Bouffard.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me today, Jack. I appreciate it. I know it was a coin toss between you and Matt, so sorry that you lost.
Yeah, I think you would have held your audience better having me on the show. So.
That's true. Very
just
true.
I said that.
Well, I won't tell him. He'll probably be listening in anyway. But thanks, Jack. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. You can always find me on Facebook, because I am a Facebook junkie, Mel Majoros. Become a fan or like or whatever they do now on Facebook of the show, The Cancer Warrior, on PowerRadio.com. You can find me on Twitter at Mel Majoros. Check out the blogspot, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And you know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.